Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way. It's the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies, but not in a creepy way.
Spoiler alert.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1996 Ted Demme movie, Beautiful Girls. Written by Scott Rosenberg.
And what else has Scott Rosenberg written?
He wrote Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, Con Air, Disturbing Behavior, and he wrote the screenplay for High Fidelity and Gone in 60 Seconds.
Quite a catalog he has.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, you know, I had not seen this movie before. And of course, I look at these picks from you for movies that I have never seen, and I'm always curious as I'm watching the movie why I'm watching the movie.
Yes, and now that I know that, I get curious about what conclusion you reach while watching the movie about why I wanted you to watch it.
Yeah, which is just a never-ending circle. So tell me why I watched this movie.
This is a movie I saw when I was in college, and it really resonated with me. Part of that is the plot. Part of that is the music. Part of that, the performances. But there was one aspect that even while I was watching it as a 19-year-old college student, that I remember thinking, this is probably not okay, and I will likely react to it differently later in life, particularly after I've become a father. So I've always had it in the back of my mind that I wanted to revisit this movie and see how my perspective had changed. Yeah, this movie really, it always stuck with me, and I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe it will come out as we discuss it.
Yeah, well, it's got a great cast. And although I'll tell you right up front, it's a little speechy, this movie.
Yeah, it's a writerly movie.
Yeah, very much so. But it's also a very sweet movie. I mean, I thought actually it had a sweetness to it that was fun. But yeah, so do we want to start the plot?
Go ahead.
Okay. The movie opens with Willie Conway, played by Timothy Hutton. And he's described, at least on Wikipedia, as a semi-successful pianist who is coming home for a reunion. And I guess it's a class reunion, but it's the middle of wintertime, so it's strange.
Yeah, that's strange. I also didn't pick up on the semi-successful part of it.
Yeah.
He didn't seem very successful at all.
No, he definitely wasn't making any money at it, because he was already, as the very first thing you realize about him is that he's looking at taking a real job. And so this,
yeah, and he travels to his reunion by buying a horrible sounding like $43 one way bus ticket.
Yeah, it's not glamorous. And actually, he's not very glamorous in this movie. He actually looks kind of greasy, if you will. And this is definitely at least. And now I know. It's funny because I usually get the plots from Wikipedia and then just pepper them with stuff as I go along. But this one didn't have any plot synopsis in Wikipedia. It just lists all the boys and all the girls and kind of what their characteristics are, because this is kind of a character study.
Yeah, I mean, it has a narrative, but it's one of those ensemble movies that is more a collection of scenes than anything else.
Exactly. It's kind of a, I don't know if it's trying to just do like a straight ripoff of The Big Chill, or maybe it's just because any reunion movie with an ensemble cast is going to be compared to The Big Chill.
The Big Chill was more contained, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like more one setting.
Yeah. And it was a very short period of time. This is a little bit longer.
Yeah, this is a couple of weeks at least.
Yeah. So there's time for character growth and development a little bit. And that's a good thing because all of these characters need to grow and develop. I keep remembering the whole Trees Lounge quote from our Uncle John about all these people are making horrible decisions in their life.
Yeah, I wondered if you were going to have the Uncle John reaction to this movie.
Yeah. Well, not quite, because it wasn't... This is sad for me to say it, but this is a movie about people a lot younger than I am now. So I didn't... It's not like I put myself in their position. Although, I guess, you know, a change of circumstance and we're all kind of back in that position.
Yeah, I was... What struck me watching it this time around was when I watched it the first time, I was, I think it was in between my sophomore and junior year at college. So it was a time when I was transferring from a larger school where, I was close to some of my, high school buddies, to a much smaller school where I was, further away from them and not likely to see them often. So, watching this movie the first time, I still had the sense that when I grew up, I would remain in contact and remain buddies, with my high school friends, much like the group in this movie. As it turns out, that is not true. I'm not good at staying in touch with people. And I'm much more of a homebody than I ever realized I was back when I was living with our parents.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, living with your parents forces you out of the house, I think. At least it would for me.
No, it absolutely did. And I had no idea until I had an apartment of my own how much I enjoyed being at home.
Yeah, it's...
Once I had my own castle, you know.
Well, and that's one thing that, you know, my wife is an only child. So I don't think she gets just the innate happiness I am when I get a minute to myself, you know, I mean, just, you know, time to just, you know, sit in your own quiet thoughts. Well, especially with a child now, since that will never happen again. Although again, you know, I'm trading up. I could be, you know, living by myself someplace in a crappy apartment. I could be sitting in an apartment with a wall covered in centerfolds.
that was another thing that struck me about the dated nature of this movie is that was back when supermodels were a thing.
Oh yeah,
and maybe it's just because I'm older and I'm out of touch with that part of pop culture, but I get the sense that it's moved on from the supermodel celebrity to more of the reality star celebrity or the celebrity for the sake of being a celebrity. And that supermodels aren't as much of a thing anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was definitely a 90s phenomena. But you know what else is a 90s phenomena? Pete Drogue. Now, I don't know enough about this guy. But I know that he's, I know him as, if you don't love me, I'll kill myself, from the Dumb and Dumber soundtrack.
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, it's a great soundtrack. It has some fun stuff. And If You Don't Love Me, I'll Kill Myself is a great song, and he sings that. And he also sings the title song to this movie. It's called Beautiful Girl. And that's what the movie opens with.
A song that it turns out I really dig.
Yeah, it's fun.
I questioned you about it when I heard the instrumental version at the end.
Oh,
like, Eric, find out what that song is for me.
Oh, it's hilarious because you sent me the message and I had just finished up watching the movie and plugging in all of the... I mean, I watched it and then I went back and looked for where all the songs appeared in the movie because it's got a good soundtrack. And I was so excited. You're like, hey, 7 minutes left of the movie. What's that song with the slide guitar? Well, Beth, I Kiss. Except, of course, Beth doesn't have a slide guitar in it. But, yeah, no, it's just the instrumental version.
I'm not quite a kissophile as you are, but I was pretty sure that wasn't Beth.
Yeah, it turns out, yeah, you're right. But anyway, I thought Beth was very well inserted in this movie, though. Anyway, so back to the story. Willie the piano player is coming home to the reunion, to his small town. Knightsbridge, what's the state? Is it Massachusetts?
Massachusetts.
Okay.
It's got to be. There's Larry Bird and Red Sox stuff all throughout the movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So he comes home, and then we meet Tommy Birdman Roland, played by Matt Dillon. And he's the head snowplower and former high school football star. And he's in his plow truck with his coworker Kev, played by Max Perlich. By the way, I love Max Perlich.
I love Kev. He was great.
Oh, absolutely. And they are plowing the driveway, as it turns out, of a one Darian Smalls, a female, played by Lauren Holly. The unfortunate part of that is Darian is married and has kids, but still is completely, I don't know, in love with is the wrong word, but she can't let her old high school flame Tommy go, and he can't let her go, even though he's got a girlfriend.
Right, and it seems like a very open secret to the entire town.
Yeah, and Kev doesn't approve right from the get-go. Yeah, he's a little creased, which I thought was a fun piece of language. When people get upset, I guess they get creased.
Yeah, I'd never heard that before. But yeah, I love his subtle admonishments. Why don't I take the mugs back then?
Oh yeah, no, he's the voice of reason for a lot of this movie. Even though he's just in the same place as all the other guys in this movie. You know, nobody is quite satisfied with their place in life at the moment and who they're with. Well, maybe not nobody, but very few of the guys are.
Yeah, it's funny. Another thing I noticed that was different watching it now is when I was 19, you know, I identified with Willie C, and that's who I wanted to be in that group of friends. But now that I'm older, I realize the one you really want to be is Mo. He's got it all together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think being stinky would be fine, too.
Yeah. It's got that weird eye thing, though.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, yeah. So then we adjourn from the snow plowing to the River Oasis Cafe, where we meet another snowplower, and this is Paul Kirkwood, who's played by Michael Rapaport, who is fantastic. And Paul gives us the center of this movie. He has a couple of little speeches or monologues where he basically defines the rules of this movie. He is obsessed with centerfold models and supermodels, and he is also in love with his old girlfriend, Jan, who's played by Martha Plimpton, who has moved on. She is now dating a butcher or something, and he cannot let her go. In fact, when it snows, to get back at her, he plows snow directly into her garage door.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So yeah, they were together, and then she gave him the ultimatum. And he hesitated, so they decided to take a break. Decided that they were going to take a break.
Yeah, she decided, because he's not happy having a break.
But he does decide that his next girl is going to be a model.
Of course, yes. And by the way, this is the point in the movie where we hear Greg Kinn's breakup song. Which is just fantastic.
That's funny. I never knew that was a Greg Kinn song, but yeah, it's perfect here.
Yeah, well, I would never have. I mean, you know, because when you listen to the song, I don't know. I just think I remember mostly the part of it, and not necessarily the words. But yeah, it's a great song. So in the meantime, Willie arrives home and is picked up at the bus station by Michael Morris, played by Noah Emmerich. And he is a factory manager by profession. And unlike his friends, he's actually settled down and has a family and seems to be happy.
Noah Emmerich is awesome in everything he's in.
Well, what other stuff has he been in?
He was Jim Carrey's like best friend in The Truman Show. He was great in that. He had a couple episode arc on the first season of The Walking Dead, which he was great in. And he's one of the main characters on one of my current favorite shows on TV, The Americans.
Yeah, well, he's definitely good in this movie. And he's got a nice rich part, too. Moe's a good character.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get to it later, but he seems like the most boring one. But as it turns out, don't set him off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's not entirely satisfied or as satisfied with his life as we think he is to begin with.
Everybody in this group of friends seems to idolize Willie because he actually got out and followed his dream. And Willie is coming home lost because his dream is not that he followed isn't turning out very well. And he doesn't really know what he's going to do with his life. So he's at a crossroads at the same time that everybody else thinks he's the shit.
Exactly. And Mo asks Willie if he's still seeing that girl. And Willie is sort of, he's not sure whether he's still going to be seeing that girl, the girl he's been seeing in New York. That's part of why he's here, that this is the crossroads.
Yeah, he makes it sound like they're still together just because he hasn't gotten around to breaking up with her yet.
Exactly, yeah, like he's maybe doing her a favor. But she's a lawyer and successful, so, you know, even before you meet her, you realize that maybe she's kind of out of his current league.
Right.
So Mo drops off Willie at his dad's house, the house he grew up in. And his dad, Dick, is played by Richard Bright. And I guess he's described as being like terminally depressed. Not terminally, but, you know, profoundly depressed. But I thought maybe he was like a stroke victim or something.
No, he was just really kind of broken and pathetic. He seemed like he didn't really have anything to look forward to ever.
Yeah. And like a little bit of a hoarder, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Or maybe I'm just projecting or whatever.
possibly. Sorry, I needed to go off mic to have a coughing fit.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Whatever you need to do. So then we meet Willie's younger brother, Bobby, who is played by David Arquette. And he doesn't have a lot of screen time, but his character is sufficiently a weirdo that hopefully David Arquette had fun playing it.
Yeah, he doesn't get many lines, but he makes the most out of all of them.
And this is when the creepometer starts to rise, because Willie then notices the girl who lives next door, named Marty. And she's cute and funny and smart. And she's 13.
Yeah, this is the professional era Natalie Portman.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I mean, her character is cute and funny and smart. And Timothy Hutton does a good job playing, like, he's obviously infatuated with her. In a way that is not comfortable even to himself.
Right. She's very clever. She's the most writerly person in the whole movie. She always has the most clever and perfect thing to say. Way too interesting for a 13-year-old girl.
Most definitely. Yeah. So that's when it starts to get a little creepy. But luckily, we then go to the next couple scenes, which involve, in short order, two wonderful speeches by Michael Rapaport. One about where we find out the depth of his obsession with Jan and her new meat cutter boyfriend.
Hey, Willie, Wally C. What's up, bad boy?
Wally.
You remember Al McPherson?
Hey, Al. How you doing?
Dan's banging some meat cutter.
Things started to get crazy about a month ago.
Yeah, I heard you got the ultimatum.
Yeah, like, fuck that, man. What right does she have to give me the ultimatum?
7 years. You've been going out 7 years.
So what? What difference does that make, 7 years? What's the big deal?
Let me ask you, how old is Jan?
Listen, Willie, don't start with me about this.
How
Willie,
old
don't.
Is she?
She's 27.
She, right, 27 years old.
Yes, she's 27.
So maybe she wants to have kids.
So what? So what? I want to have kids too, but what's the rush? Huh? Kathy Lee Gifford just had a kid and she's 45 fucking years old.
So who's this guy?
Victor. Victor the meat cutter. And you want to puke? Are you ready to puke? This guy's 40, divorced, and has 3 kids of his own.
3 kids, all right, so there's no way she's getting any sperm from this guy,
exactly,
right?
Will. Yeah. I knew you would understand this, but you want to know what really creases me? Jan's a vegetarian.
Right.
You see the hypocrisy? Jan's a vegetarian, he's a meat cutter.
Oh, wow.
What kind of life can she have with a man who stinks of brisket?
Showtime is called.
And then a little bit later, he gives his model speech, which is basically like the problem with this movie.
Jesus.
You still seeing that chick in New York? The lawyer?
Tracy, yeah.
Tracy. What's going on?
She's great.
And?
What?
What's the deal?
I don't know. You know what? We're going through this stage.
They're all sisters, Will. Trust me, they're all sisters. It's one big conspiracy. Leave it alone. You been playing piano?
Yeah, yeah, I'm playing. Playing nothing steady.
Good money?
So how they doing?
Are you kidding me, man? All he ever thinks about is Darian Smalls.
Come on, still?
Still. Nothing changes around here, Will. And every time Sharon looks at Bertie's face and sees him thinking about Darian, it's translated into another ugly pound when she looks at herself in the mirror. Have you seen her? She looks like one of those kids Sally Struthers feeds paste to. It's no good. We need models.
Models? What do you mean?
Models. We need models. They're beautiful. They're rich. They travel a lot, so you don't have to spend that much time with them. Those fuckers that date models, they got it made. My next girlfriend's gonna be a 6-foot-tall model. Definitely.
Okay.
Big one.
Models.
I like those chicks.
Which later in the movie, Rosie O'Donnell gives the counter-argument to. But between those two speeches, we go over to Tommy's house, where we meet Tommy's girlfriend, Sharon, who's played by Mira Sorvino. And it's a horrible situation. Because, you know, Sharon knows about Darian, and she can't compete with Darian, and Tommy's highlight of his life was in high school, and that's far behind him.
Yeah, Tommy's that guy, the guy that peaked in high school.
Yeah, and he's also, I mean, again, since everybody pretty much knows about Darian, and nobody approves of how he treats Sharon, or rather that Sharon stays with him, because it doesn't seem like he treats her badly. It's just that he cheats on her.
Right, rather publicly.
Yeah.
And it's pretty bad.
Oh, you know, it is bad. And, you know, they make a point of the fact that she doesn't eat, maybe because of stress or some anorexia to do with her low self-esteem, and maybe that's why she's in her relationship with Tommy anyway.
Well, yeah, I thought the implication was that that was sort of her way of trying to compete with Darian, is to get super skinny by not eating.
Well, it could be. But yeah, nobody approves of that either. And it's much like a real group of friends. They all talk about each other behind each other's back. I mean, it's all, the group has a thought on something and they're all happy to talk about it when the person the thought is about isn't there.
Yeah. And only indirectly talk about it when they are there.
Yeah. Cause they don't want to really have the argument about it. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So again, then Michael Ravivore gives his great speech about models and why they need models for girlfriends. And then the next item of note was that Willie and Marty have another conversation, and Marty compliments Willie's sideburns. So that's creep factor 7, I put.
Just as a preview, what was your maximum creep in the movie?
Oh, I thought I got up to about 9. I thought it was, you know, at first, you know, when you first have the meeting of Willie and Marty, Willie seems to be the one who's just, you know, he's the creep. But the next couple of times they talk, it's like she's flirting with him too. Even though it's not right, the creep level rises because all it does is feed his creepiness. And he tells his friends about her. So, and the friends are like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, I think his premise was the way he was trying to justify his interest was that he thought she was a really sort of interesting, cool girl who had so much potential and was going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't think he was even admitting to himself that he was somewhat attracted to her, just that he thought she was going to do great things and was really curious about how she was going to turn out.
He was attracted to her, and for whatever reason, in a way that he was not attracted to this girlfriend in New York. Like, there was something about her that now was different. It was like a spark that wasn't in that other relationship.
Yeah, you get the sense that he doesn't get to have the same kind of snappy banter with his girlfriend that he gets to have with 13-year-old Marty.
Yeah. So, but luckily, again, after the creepy comes Rappaport, right to your aid. Because he then, Michael Rappaport, Paul, goes into the restaurant where Jan works and makes, as Jan's boss says, a spectacle. So he gives her a ring and proposes, and she shoots him down. And there's...
He has the greatest proposal ever. It's basically here.
Oh, yeah, and I love the whole little thing about the ring being brown. I thought was pretty funny.
You mean champagne?
Yes, I mean champagne. It's a new thing, you know, in diamonds. It's so funny.
Fucking thing's brown.
Champagne. It's the newest thing.
What are you talking about?
It's a trend.
Frank, two beers.
It's all in culture. It's a trend in diamonds. Champagne. It's a nice stone, Paul.
Yeah, no, I heard about this. It's very big in the diamond trade. They're trying to create a new market.
Oh, right, yeah. They were calling a piss, but they weren't moving any units. What's with you, man?
What?
Well, how much you pay for this brown rock?
What difference does it make?
What difference does it make? Diamonds are supposed to be colorless. You go out and you buy a colored diamond for a girl you're not even seeing, man. You've been eating retard sandwiches again.
Hey, I don't need your shit, Birdie.
I think you do.
I think I don't.
I think you do.
Hey, fuck you, Mr. High Horse. You're like a human Geraldo episode, for Christ's sakes.
The fuck is that supposed to be?
Come on, guys, come on. No, fuck that. No, fuck that. You got one broad destroying her marriage, the other one destroying her stomach.
Hey,
you just sit around and watch hockey.
Hey, don't push it, man.
Oh, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do, beat me up after class? Take my lunch money? This ain't high school anymore, Birdie. Legend's dead.
Hey, well, the legend can still fuck you up, all right?
Bullshit.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, butt out, Conway, right? Don't come waltzing back in here with your big city bullshit, right? No one wants to hear that crap.
What a fucking loser.
Faggot.
Prick.
Asshole.
Hey, free apps. I got free apps.
And having it come up again and Kev and everything is just priceless. Like theater.
Yeah, Kev backs him up. Kevin is a tremendous wingman.
He is. He's absolutely. Anyway, so Willie and Tommy end up going to Stinky's. This is Stanley Stinky Womack, who, by the way, doesn't like to be called Stinky. He's the proprietor bartender of a local bar that he recently purchased and renovated. So, and like I said, Stinky's pretty successful, too. Although, he still is Stinky, so that's not great.
Right.
Yeah. And this is where Billy Preston's Will It Go Round in Circles gets played. Let's see. I love the fact that Stinky's got apps.
He's really proud of them.
Oh, he is. And who wouldn't be? He's got apps.
Yeah, that was another funny anachronism. Apps means something totally different nowadays.
Oh yeah. I have to drop in a line. The code is, "You've been eating retard sandwiches again."
That was going to be one of my options at the end of the.
Oh. Sorry.
No, it's a good one. I wasn't even sure it was appropriate, so I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, no, it's horribly inappropriate. I would never approve of that word or such a language. But then we get more creeping between Marty and Willie. And again, this is where they're both kind of flirting back and forth. And
is this next creep the ice skating?
I think the ice skating comes just a little bit later. That is the maximum creep level.
Hey!
Willie boy!
What are you doing?
Hanging out. I like to mash snow. Gives me a tremendous sense of self-satisfaction. You got a girlfriend?
Why do you ask?
I don't know. You're a dude in flux. If I'm not mistaken, you've come back here to the House of Loneliness and Tears to Daddy Downer and Brother Bummer to come to some sort of decision about life. A life decision, if you will.
You fancy yourself a perceptive little thing, don't you?
I don't know about little thing. I happen to be the tallest girl in my class. I may just grow to be 5'10". I'll be hot. All right, life decision. Got the full-on Hamlet thing going. You know Hamlet? Danish prince couldn't make decisions.
Yeah, I know Hamlet.
So, got that girlfriend.
Yeah, there is one.
Do you want to get married?
I think so.
You don't?
I'm not sure.
She fat?
No, she's not fat. She's quite nice, actually.
So why don't you marry her?
Oh, marry her. You know, I knew I came back here for a reason. Thank you.
That's right. Tease the little kid.
See you around.
See ya.
Then we meet Gina Barisano, played by Rosie O'Donnell. And Gina's character, a little bit like Paul, speaks in monologues, except she completely speaks in monologues.
Yeah, you nailed it right there. That's the exact sense I had, is that she was the movie's counterpart to Paul.
Yeah. And they do it kind of all movie long, which is nice. You know, and it was fine. Like I said, it's kind of a speech-heavy movie, but because it's discussing these relationship issues, you kind of have to that. There's not a whole lot of action in this. There's some, but not a whole lot. And we also meet Moe's wife, Sarah, who's played by Anne Bobby from...
I don't know.
Nightbreed.
Oh, was that her?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, she made it out.
Well, at least to this movie, yeah.
At least she had some sort of career palate cleanser.
Yeah. And she did fine. I mean, her character was not, you know, it was a much smaller role than the rest of the ladies, but it was still pretty good. And, you know, she did fine. Then we have another round of Paul plowing snow right into Jan's garage door, like forcefully. Like he could have be breaking her garage door. Garage doors are expensive. And he does this while I Ran So Far by Flock of Seagulls is playing.
I really enjoyed the music in this movie.
Oh, yeah. So then we go back to Stinky's and we meet Andera, who's Uma Thurman. And she's Stinky's cousin from Chicago.
This was a little bit of a misfire for me, but that just, it might be my own neuroses.
You mean as far as Manhands being the prettiest girl in the movie?
Yeah, she's supposed to be like the drop-dead gorgeous, idealized woman who is both beautiful and super cool to hang out with. And I just don't get it. I've never thought Uma Thurman was particularly attractive. I mean, she's a fine actress, but it's just not my thing. So it was hard for me to get behind.
And as we learn from Lost Boys, she's not really your type anyway. And actually, I don't think...
Yeah, it's all Star's fault.
I think actually she does fine in this movie, but yeah, I don't think she certainly isn't any more attractive than Mira Sorvino. Although it's funny, because I thought in terms of attractiveness, Darian wasn't all that attractive. I mean, of course, her character is horrible, but that's just sorry, Anastasia, for just going down to talk about how the ladies look. Yeah, none of the guys look very good either. Although,
yeah, Mo is pretty chubby.
Yeah, Mo is chubby. Stinky is chubby. Kev is tiny and weird mustache.
It's so funny. Every time you talk about mustaches, you say weird, but I'm pretty sure you mean awesome.
In this case, yeah. Yeah. Kev has a great, he's just got the best gig in this movie.
Yeah. I don't know any of the story of the production, but, in my mind, he pulled, Benicio del Toro in the Usual Suspects move and just showed up in character, completely off script, and everybody just sort of went with it.
Oh, I want that to be the case. I really do.
I've decided that is the case.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to go with that because
he showed up with that wool hat and that mustache, kind of mumbling his awesome one-liners, and everybody was looking around like, "What is this guy doing?" But it's brilliant. Turned out to be brilliant.
Then we get, of course, Endera. All the guys are fumbling over themselves trying to impress Endera, and they convince Willie to play a song, and everybody sings, of course, the song that impresses all the girls, Sweet Caroline.
Believe it or not, this movie may have been my introduction to that song.
It makes sense. It was before your time.
I mean, I'm sure I'd heard it, and it was vaguely familiar, but this movie actually started me down a bit of a Neil Diamond rabbit hole. Which was delightful.
Oh, yeah. The thing about Neil Diamond is he is earnest. He does not lack for enthusiasm. And when you sing along to a Neil Diamond song, you have to sing along with enthusiasm.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like we've been talking about, you know, in comedies, the important part about acting in comedies is that you have to play your roles completely straight. So if you're singing a Neil Diamond song, you got to sing it, you know. Like you're really looking for your heart light, or you're really proud about coming to America. Anyway, so after Sweet Caroline, we get maybe the longest speech I'm going to put from this, but certainly it's the counterpoint to Paul's argument. It's Rosie's Little Nibbler's speech.
I'm finished speaking to both of you, okay? You're both fucking insane. You want to know what your problem is? MTV, Playboy, and Madison fucking Avenue. Yes, let me explain something to you, okay? Girls with big tits have big asses. Girls with little tits have little asses. That's the way it goes. God doesn't fuck around. He's a fair guy. He gave the fatties big, beautiful tits. And the skinnies, little, tiny nibblers. It's not my rule. You don't like it, call him. Hey, Mitch. Thank you. Oh, guys, look what we have here. Look at this. Your favorite. Oh, you like that?
I can go along with that.
Yeah, that's nice, right? Well, it doesn't exist, okay? Look at the hair. The hair is long, is flowing, it's like a river. Well, it's a fucking weave, okay?
Oh.
And the tits. Please, I could hang my overcoat on them. Tits by design were invented to be suckled by babies. Yes, they're purely functional. These are Silicone City. And look, my favorite, the shaved pubis. Pubic hair being so unruly and all. Very key. This is a mockery. This is a sham. This is bullshit.
Oh.
Implants, collagen, plastic, cap teeth, the fat sucked out, the hair extended, the nose fixed, the bush shaved. These are not real women, all right? They're beauty freaks. And they make all us normal women with our wrinkles, our puckered boobs, hi, Bob, our cellulite feel somehow inadequate. Well, I don't buy it, all right? But you fucking mooks, you think if there's a chance in hell that you'll end up with one of these women, you don't give us real women anything approaching a commitment. It's pathetic. I don't know what you think you're going to do. You're going to end up 80 years old drooling in some nursing home. Then you're going to decide it's time to settle down, get married, have kids. What are you going to find, a cheerleader? Charge it, Mitch.
I think you're oversimplifying.
Oh, eat me. Look at Paul. With his models on the wall, his dog named Elle McPherson. He's insane. He's obsessed. You're all obsessed. If you had an ounce of self-esteem, of self-worth, of self-confidence, you would realize that, as trite as it may sound, beauty is truly skin deep. And you know what? If you ever did hook one of those girls, I guarantee you'd be sick of her.
Yeah, I suppose I'd get sick of her after about, what, 20 or 30 years?
Get over yourself. Thank you, Mitch.
What?
Say hello to Gertrude. No matter how perfect the nipple, how supple the thigh, unless there's some other shit going on in the relationship besides the physical, it's gonna get old, okay? And you guys, as a gender, have got to get a grip. Otherwise, the future of the human race is in jeopardy.
What was that?
I have to wait for you, Pete?
I don't know.
You could slow down.
Great ass.
Nice tits. Come on, let's go.
It was the first time that it really hit home to me that this movie really is just a series of unconnected scenes that eventually tells a story arc once you get all the way through them.
Yeah, and very, like you said, very writerly.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was well acted. I enjoyed watching this movie, even though when it started, I'm like, oh no, this is going to be like one of those thinky feely movies. And it was a little thinky, but you know, it was not too bad. So we get another scene of Creepy Willy, and I don't even remember which this one is. I just noted in my notes where these scenes of creeperness happen. And then we get to the surprise party thrown by Sharon.
So painful to watch.
Oh, but it starts out so well because Paul is going to DJ. And the only rule they give him is no Jethro Tull. And so, of course, they play Locomotive Breath, which is also a song that when I listen to, you have to sing along with, passionately. I'm a big Jethro Tull fan. And
that's one of those songs that you have to sing with one leg up on something.
Even when you're driving, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. In fact, you gotta pause it at a certain place before you go to a stoplight because you have to have a good long stretch of road for some parts of it. Anyway.
Yeah, so you can break out your air flute.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. Why not? So yeah, so the party, the surprise party, is thrown by Sharon strictly to impress Tommy, and Rosie and Nightbreed Girl had told her this is not a good idea, but they're gonna support her. So they go to the VFW, and this party, and everything seems to be going just fine, and then Darian shows up drunk
with a gift.
Yeah, and it's just super uncomfortable.
In a really genuine moment, though, Matt Dillon is talking with his buddies and having a good time, and then Darian shows up. And do you remember what his buddies did?
What did they do? Oh, did they hustle Sharon out of there?
No, they just bailed.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. No, you dug the hole, dude.
Yeah. That's absolutely what would happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Sharon leaves. And heartbroken. And, Tommy's left with drunk Darian. And then we have the skating scene and the speech about Pooh. Winnie the. And yeah, I think this was the top of the creep level for me.
Hey!
What the heck are you doing here?
My friends are ice fishing in the shack over there.
Those guys are your friends?
You know them?
They're here every Sunday. We call them the drunken, dry, heaving, cheese-eating, filth-eating, ass boys. Are your friends?
They're acquaintances, really.
Right.
So where's Scooter?
Who?
What's his name? Billy? Tiger? Pookie? The kid on the bike.
Andrew,
that's it. Where is it?
Don't doubt at me. I'm not into him anymore. It's a turnip.
So you got someone new?
Yep. You.
What?
You. You're my new boyfriend, Willie. You up to it? Oh, I feel faint. Oh. My hero. So, you gonna marry that girl in NYC?
I don't know. Why?
I don't think you should.
How come?
You should wait till you're ready. You should wait till you meet someone who excites you.
Yeah, well, you know, she may not be out there.
It's like the Wizard of Oz, William. The whole time it was right in your own backyard.
What do you mean?
You. Me and you.
Really?
Yep, you don't think?
Well, we have a little age problem.
I know where star-crossed is Romeo and Juliet. It's tragedy of Elizabethan proportions.
What light through yonder window breaks, 'tis the east and Juliet is the sun.
And the color girls go do 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 do.
So what do we do?
Last poor Romeo, we can't do diddly. He'll go to penitentiary. I'll be the laughing stock of the brownies. If your feelings for me are true, we'll wait.
Wait?
Yep. Wait 5 years. I'll be 18. We can walk through this world together.
You know, in 5 years, you won't even remember me.
William.
I'm formed and you're not, and you still have changes to go through. You'll change, and then I'll be Winnie the Pooh to your Christopher Robin.
No literary references left unturned. How do you figure Pooh?
Well, Christopher Robin outgrew Pooh. That's how it ended. He had Pooh when he was a child. You know, when he matured, he didn't need him anymore.
It's the saddest thing I ever heard.
Yeah, but it's true. You know, you don't realize it now, but you'll be doing some changing. And, I can't be a poo.
I think I'll skate away now, too.
All right, Christopher.
Yeah, it was so uncomfortable because this is the point in the movie where you realize he has led Marty on enough that she has gotten it in her head that once she grows older, they should be boyfriend and girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. And when he finds out that she thinks this, he's actually kind of taken by that idea briefly.
He's absolutely flattered.
Yeah.
He does not shut it down right away.
No. Which, like you said, is a good acting job.
And there's a great little shot of Mo in the background who's skating with his kids watching this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because Marty does this playful little trust fall into Willie's arms. and Mo sees it and almost bites the dust on his cape.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Marty's friends see her and are laughing at her. It's bad for everybody.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And then, of course, what happens after all the creepy things? We get Paul again. I love Paul in this movie. Because Paul takes Andera out strictly for the purpose of making Jan jealous. And,
yeah, I mean, he's, it's one of those great scenes where an actor is playing someone who can't act. So he's both overacting and not acting very well at all. It was a good job by him.
Oh, absolutely. It was perfect. And I thought, you know, I thought the relationship between Andera and Paul was actually, you know, pretty cool. She was trying to do him a favor when she realizes what's going on. But then, you know, of course, he takes it too far, and she is out of there. So, you know, in some way, Paul has gotten what he wants because Jan went home. But,
Yeah, well, and Deer is a cool chick. The movie tells us that all the time.
Yeah, throughout the whole movie. Mm-hmm. So, Andera walks home.
Runs into Tommy, right?
And then...
The goodnight, sweet girl chat.
Yes. Yes, which again, another nice speech.
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
How long have you been going out with your boyfriend?
8 months.
That's good.
It's
Very good.
Makes you happy?
Yeah. I look for that in a man, you know. The ones who make me miserable don't seem to last.
Right?
You know, there's four words I need to hear before I go to sleep. Four words. Good night, sweet girl. That's all it takes. I'm easy, I know. But a guy who can muster up those four words is a guy I want to stay with.
That one is more of a dialogue, to be fair.
Well, yeah. Actually, there's another good Paul Willie dialogue.
I spoke to Jan this morning. It was obvious to both of us that she no longer cares. She ran out of that restaurant like a complete maniac, Willie, I'm telling you. But I guess once she thought about it, she didn't realize that she didn't give a shit anymore.
Yeah. I spoke to Tracy. She's coming up this weekend for the reunion.
Is that right? I gotta meet this girl, Tracy.
You really gotta take this shit down.
Why?
No, I mean, you're like a serial killer.
Hey, don't cap on my supermodels, Johnny. Don't go there. Leave it alone.
I'm just saying, it's creepy.
Hey, look who's talking, Mr. Jerry Lee Lewis.
Oh, no, fucking Mo.
I don't judge you, okay? If she could cut her own food, she's fair game.
Okay, all right. All I'm saying is you gotta take all this down because it's really, it's creepy and it,
look,
and it's...
the supermodels are beautiful girls, Will. A beautiful girl can make you dizzy. Like you've been drinking Jack and Coke all morning. She can make you feel high, full of single greatest commodity known to man. Promise. The promise of a better day. The promise of a greater hope. Promise of a new tomorrow. This particular ore can be found in the gait of a beautiful girl. In her smile and in her soul. In the way she makes every rotten little thing about life seem like it's gonna be okay. The supermodels, Willie, that's all they are. Bottle promise. Scenes from a brand new day. Hope dancing in stiletto heels.
I am now going to check your freezer for human heads.
A beautiful girl is all powerful, and that is as good as love. That's as good as love.
Paul's great for Willie. If Paul wasn't around, it would be very hard to see Willie as any sort of protagonist for the movie.
Oh, yeah. No, Paul is essential to this whole thing. At this point, we have Tommy who has taken Darian home. But anyway.
Well, so at his birthday party, Tommy took Darian home because she was drunk and she tried to get him to go inside and he refused. So I think the birthday party was the first time that Tommy may have seen himself through others' eyes and became disgusted by his own actions.
Yeah, because clearly he has slept with her many times in the past.
Yeah, she's actually pretty surprised that he won't go inside with her.
Yeah, she counts on it. I mean, he's just her.
Yeah, her husband's out of town. She's sent the kid away.
Yep. This is where in the movie I thought, oh, Lauren Holly is playing Leah Remini.
Because what?
I don't like King of the Hill. Not King of the Hill. King of Queens. Hello. I don't know how much King of Queens you watched, but Leah Remini's character in King of Queens is kind of mean. And Darian, the character, is the devil.
Mean as a snake.
Yes. Yes, as it turns out. So, then we have Willie and Andera are ice fishing. Because, like I said, Dan, you said before, Andera is super cool. And so that's the cool thing to do, is go and have a nice platonic ice fishing session.
Yeah, so they can talk about life.
Yeah. And then we meet Tracy, the girl from New York, Annabeth Gish. And she's lovely and funny and smart. And
Willie's family sure likes her. She is superb.
Yeah, I was going to say dinner was superb. It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah, sad dad doesn't have much of a vocabulary.
No, and crazy younger brother is being a crazy younger brother.
Yeah, he is the creep of the family. If you get the sense that if he was in Willie's shoes, he would pull the trigger on a relationship with underage Marty.
Oh, absolutely. It wouldn't even know, he wouldn't even know it was wrong. So, and this is where the growth and development seems to start kicking in, especially for Tommy. And I put a note here because we have another Willie and Marty scene. This is the scene through the window, I believe, where...
Yeah, Willie is there with his girlfriend, and he is going upstairs to change so that they can go out together. But he stops because out his window he sees a sad Marty.
Yeah, and they have another creepy conversation, but I noted that this was a little bit sweeter.
After the ice rink, I think Willie realizes he needs to dial it back.
Yeah. So Tommy at this point decides to skip the reunion. And one of the things when Paul finds out that Tommy's not going, he's like, wow, what? Well, you got to go. And he's like, no. Channel 38 is showing Rich Man, Poor Man back to back. Have you ever seen Rich Man, Poor Man?
I'm not familiar with it, but it must be amazing because Paul looks so distressed that he's going to miss it.
Oh, yeah. He has to flip the coin. He's not sure which way to go. I don't know anything about
Rich. He wants Tommy to flip it for him, and Tommy tells him, you can't do that. You have to experience it, commercials and everything.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
And Paul agrees. He's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So then I put a note that I'm going to have to drop in a Rosie quote. I don't even know what is happening at this point, but I just put Rosie is over-enunciating.
Oh, well, of course you are.
Always room for improvement.
Do you know who you look a little like?
Who?
Ally Sheedy. Do you know Ally Sheedy?
I get that all the time.
Remember her? What happened to her? She was in the Breakfast Club movie with the Estevez brothers.
Oh, that's right.
I've never seen her since.
Now, you know, did you ever see Misery?
No.
Because you remind me of Kathy Bates.
Oh, don't you say that.
So much.
So I didn't hear. Have you seen Rich Man, Poor Man?
Oh, no. I have no idea what it is. I mean, I guess it's a miniseries. Yeah, not a clue.
Well, it must be awesome.
Yeah, well, so Tommy's not going to the reunion, but the person going to the reunion is Darian. And she's actually told her husband, Steve, that it's going to be a big snooze fest, so he doesn't need to go. Because she assumes that Tommy's going to be there, and they can relive their old glory. But the other thing you see about the reunion is Darian has a nice little encounter with this little fat guy named Peter the Eater.
Darian came up with, apparently.
Yes. And
I love that speech because he is a short fat guy, and he tries to get Darian to remember who he is by saying that he used to have a weight problem.
Yeah, I love that. And he delivers the mean as a snake line so well.
Yeah, he just eviscerates her, you know, because she's accustomed to getting the attention of men. So I think she just assumes that this is going to be another encounter where somebody fawns over her. And he does initially, but then he brings down the hammer on her in a way she did not expect.
Oh, yeah. He is simply luring her in. Because at first you think he's just sort of hanging out there and sees her and says, ooh, I can, you know, chance to impress. But no, he's been laying in wait. So in the meantime, while the reunion's going on, Tommy decides to go to a bar we've never actually seen before. And unfortunately, at the bar... is Darian's husband, Steve, and some of his friends.
That's why Tommy went there, right?
I guess. I mean, he must have. So.
Because otherwise he would have just gone to Stinky's like he always does.
Yeah, you think. For whatever reason, he goes there, and they have a tense conversation at the bar. But the thing about Tommy is, Tommy's an athlete. He's a pretty big guy. So, you know, Tommy pretty much thinks that one-on-one he can take any of these guys. So, they like...
And he's probably right.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, when he leaves the bar, All the guys follow him out.
Well, before they leave the bar, the husband, I don't even know the husband's name.
His name is Steve.
Steve. He drops another line that was in the running for the end of the podcast.
Yeah, I was not going to say it because I thought you might.
Yeah.
Hello, Tom.
Steve.
How come you're not at the reunion?
Wasn't into it.
Won't Darian be disappointed?
Did she go?
Yeah.
It's nice.
Can I buy you a drink?
No, I'm good. I got one.
Come on, Tom. One drink.
No, I was just going to be leaving.
Okay. Let me see if I get this straight. I can't buy you a drink, but you can stick your dick into my wife.
Frank, shot a rye.
Two. See, I think it's Knightsbridge. Fucking working class towns, man. Girls grow up here. Every time they see a tool belt, they get moist.
Well, you know, I got an extra one I can lend you, Steve. Hook you up with some vice grips, ratchet, Allen wrench.
Don't fuck with me, man. Don't worry about them either. It's me and you.
You know, I don't think it is, Steve. You don't strike me as the type of guy who fights his own battles. I give you the benefit of the doubt. I'll tell you what, Steve. Why don't you do yourself a favor? Drink your shot, go back to your boys, play a little game with quarters or whatever it is you frat brothers like to do, and I'll get out of your hair.
Thanks, Frank.
Then Tommy leaves, not before all of Steve's friends come out. And even though Tommy realizes what's going to happen, he tries to fight all, like, what, five of them, four of them? But he is.
There's four, and he does a good job for a little while.
Yeah, yeah, which seems like what would happen. Then he gets the crap kicked out of him, in some cases literally.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, just to tangent slightly, I know this is almost unheard of on this show, but we had a couple of homicides this year that were after getting out of the bar, like in a bar parking lot, kicking people to death. So that shit is real.
Yeah, I forget where I saw it. It might have been on the ADN website. Earlier this year, they had a video, which was a collection of closed circuit cameras of fights that were breaking out after the bar shut down.
Yeah, it's nasty.
There were a lot of them, and they looked brutal.
Well, that's the thing. And if you can't defend yourself, either because you are so intoxicated you can't defend yourself, or because you are now injured and can't defend yourself, getting kicked in the head is not good. Luckily, though, Tommy doesn't die. That wasn't why I brought this up. I just thought, you know, the fact that they kicked him in the face at least once, I think it gave me a level of horror that I probably didn't have before this last year or so.
So did you think Tommy was going to die?
No, I was pretty sure he wasn't going to die. In fact, I was surprised how hurt he really was, that he was actually in the hospital at the end of it. But, you know, because in movies, you know, you get your ass kicked and you basically have a black eye and maybe a dribble of blood coming from one corner of your mouth, Captain Kirk style.
Yes, the Captain Kirk lip drool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's very effective. You know. But again, it's that Eddie Murphy thing of, you get shot and you're just like, no, gone without me. So this was a little more realistic, at least. This is where Mo becomes something of the hero of the group, because, you know, the chain of events, you know, the bartender called Tommy's friends, and Tommy's friends, you know, they rounded up the troops, and Mo is like, we're gonna go and take care of this, You know, Mo wants revenge.
Yeah, Mo snaps. He's a scary dude when he's angry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had some liquid courage in him to begin with. But he doesn't even hesitate. He gets the news. And he's like, we're going.
Which is hilarious, because Willie kind of plays the audience in this part, where he's sort of quippy, too. He's like, you know, so do we have a plan? And they just get out and march right into the house. He goes, okay, no plan, then. Because
yeah, he's also during the ride over to Steve's house, he's also like, it's not like Tommy didn't have it coming. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. No, everybody agrees that Tommy had it coming, but that doesn't matter to Mo.
Right.
Yeah. No, you get one of ours, we get two of yours, or whatever that saying is. And that's when, you know, the movie actually turns kind of poignant. You've got the funny scene of negotiating Steve out of the house. And Steve is just buying time because all of a sudden he's called his friends and they come to show up. And he actually says, you know, ha, the cavalry has arrived.
Steve is such a douchebag that he used a early 90s era Motorola flip phone with the giant pullout antenna cell phone to call his buddies. While he's at home.
Yeah.
No reason to use his cell phone there.
Anyway. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Very, very expensive back then.
Yeah.
It was inconvenient, expensive, and probably took a long time to press all those digits really hard.
Too funny. You know, there everybody, it's right now, it's all about dick swinging.
Are you gonna drop Mo's rant into the podcast? He says some incomprehensible shit at the end of it.
Where is he?
He didn't want me to call the cops. He said no cops.
Tommy!
Thanks,
Tommy.
Who did this?
Relax.
Who the fuck did this?
Calm down, Mo.
Frank, who did this?
Rossmore, he and his buddies, they did it.
Where are you going?
To find Steve Rossmore.
Austin East Charles Bronson.
Get him to the hospital.
Okay,
come on,
okay.
Come on.
Okay, go. It's snowing. I can't believe I'm gonna have to plow tonight.
Of course, Tommy was sleeping with the guy's wife.
So?
Well, I mean, it sounded like he was all that innocent.
So he deserved to get beat up like that?
No, but...
You see his face?
What I'm saying... Look, this does present something of a moral dilemma.
All right.
All right, fuck it. Let's lynch a bastard.
Thank you. You got a plan?
No plan.
Think he's here?
I don't know.
Fucking douchebag, man.
Easy, Mo.
Take it easy.
Yeah, yo, man, you fucked with my friend! You fucked with me! You beat up my friend! You beat up me, huh? You fuck with me! You fuck with you! You go to the fountain, you drink, you don't drink!
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't you talk back to me, little man.
Mo!
What?
We got company.
The cavalry has arrived. Assholes.
When the friends, the cavalry comes, Steve's friends, nice to have a plow truck. Because they basically took out the car.
Yeah, but... plowed it into a snowbank and lifted it with the plow, trapping them. So Steve has no cavalry.
Yes. And it's just Mo and Steve. And there is going to be a reckoning. Unfortunately, though, for the second time in this movie, I skipped past it the first time. But when Darian and Tommy were in the library and we find out that Darian really is a snake. The only, you know, the thing that that puts the nail in that coffin is that she's there in the library with her daughter talking to her, you know, the guy she's cheating on her husband with, and is irritated that the daughter's there. Well, the thing that ends this fight between Steve and Mo before it really gets started is Mo looks down and sees the little girl standing in the doorway, and reality sets in for him. So they just go home, and he realizes that he's grateful for what he has.
Right.
And then, again, everything is coming to kind of to a close here. We get a nice scene of Tommy in the hospital with Sharon. We'd find out Tommy's going to be fine. He's got some broken ribs and like 30 stitches or something.
Sharon had to be called to the hospital from being on a date.
Yeah, exactly. Which is funny.
Great.
Yeah. And Tommy has a nice speech about realizing that he's not the guy he thought he was going to be, which is kind of what Willie is going through as well. So,
right, just in a less douchey way.
Yeah.
A much more creeper way.
Yeah. At this point, Willie's made up his mind. He's gonna go back to New York, and he's not going to... At first he said he was going to take that regular job, but then Tracy tells him that, no, you know, musicians are sexy and salesmen aren't sexy or whatever. She's obviously not seen Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, and I think the unspoken words are, I'm a lawyer. It's okay. You can be a kept man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Just keep yourself in shape.
Yeah. Exactly. And don't expect any snappy banter from me, because I'm going to be tired. I want you to be quiet when I get home.
Right.
And then the final thing, the way at the end, they're saying, Willie says, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Tommy's in the hospital, and they find out he's going to be okay. Kevin Paul, because it's snowing, Kevin Paul have to go actually do his routes, sand his lots, and plow his driveways for him.
Oh, yeah. And Paul, who's listening to Beth, again, Paul, when Paul goes to Jan's house, he's always listening to interesting music, and he's crying, he's sobbing in his plow truck. And we find out, because you think he's just plowing the snow right into her garage door again, but you realize he's finally did a decent plow job to her driveway for once.
Yes. Crying while listening to Beth was one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Yeah, and then we get to the end where Willie's saying goodbye to everybody. This is the next morning, and or later that same morning. And I guess in a scene that wasn't on the script, but was told to Timothy Hutton to do, was to actually kiss Marty on the cheek. And I guess Natalie Portman didn't know it was coming, so she gave it, you know, kind of a genuine reaction to it.
Oh, that was her breaking character?
Yeah, I think so. I guess it's more of a, because nothing happened, it's kind of a sweet thing. But no, as a parent, no.
Yeah, no. No, Willie C.
Yeah.
No.
Not at all. Yeah. In fact, I think Mo would end up at Marty's dad's house because Marty's dad would have beat the shit out of Willie.
Yeah. Where are Marty's parents?
Well, that's the thing. You're absolutely right. Yeah. She has entirely too much unsupervised time.
She might have murdered her parents.
Well, she could have.
Early on in the movie.
That's possible. But there's a very sweet line at the end that I'll drop in, where between Paul and Marty.
Come back and see us, Will. We'll be right here where you left us. Nothing changes in the ridge but the seasons. You're the little neighborhood Lolita.
So you're the alcoholic high school buddy shit for brains.
That little girl was cute. What was her name? Marcy?
Where?
You're just whittling down all of my walking.
I'm sorry.
No, it's good. Good. I got plenty more.
Okay. Yeah. And we have Sweet Caroline, by Neil Diamond, and Graduation Day by Chris Isaak playing over the end credits.
So what was your overall impression of the movie? I mean, when the movie ended, had you decided why I had wanted you to watch it?
Well, no, I didn't think that, I didn't see any kind of clear agenda on your part, except that I thought it was well acted. It was a nice little character study, and there's some nice pieces of writing in there. You get a little bit of the interaction between all the female characters, but really it's a story about these guys who are all buddies.
Right.
So I don't know if that was what attracted you to it. Although I think you already said you're not quite even sure yourself.
Yeah, no, it always really stuck with me. It wasn't really a movie about plot. It was all about characters, and the characters, except for Marty and Indira, the characters all seemed really genuine and seemed like a group of people who could and would have that type of relationship with each other. So I really enjoyed it, and trying to figure out how I am reacting to it now that I'm at a different stage of my life was interesting, at least to me. You know, the Willie Marty relationship, which was creepy even when I was 19. You know, I sort of intellectually understood what was going on with Willie, and how he was sort of reconciling that his life hadn't turned out quite the way he wanted, and he saw so much future potential in Marty. But now that I'm older, I really understand a lot more of the emotional side of that. And I can see how it would be attractive to see somebody who is sort of, I think he saw himself in Marty, or at least what he wanted his 13-year-old self to be in Marty, and was really attracted to that potential in a very emotional way. I understood that emotionally now, but at the same time, I was a lot less understanding of his attraction towards her. It was not okay.
Yeah, no, in no way. And you know, another thing about this movie that it's kind of struck me is that really at the end of the movie, so at the end of the 2 weeks, you've got Tommy not going to be seeing Darian anymore, which may or may not mean that he and Sharon are back together, because it's not really clear. Although he would like her to be together. She was on a date with somebody else when she went to the hospital and he gave her that nice little speech. But other than Tommy...
Yeah, she spent the night with him in the hospital and was sleeping on his lap.
Yeah,
when
okay.
Willie came goodbye the next morning to say goodbye.
Yeah, okay. So they're reconciled. But Darian's out of the picture now. And that is pretty much the only change in this entire group of people in the 2 weeks. Everybody goes back to what they were doing before. They may be changed internally, like Willie now appreciates what he has, and Mo appreciates what he has. But everybody else, I mean, everybody is still in the same situation they were before.
Well, Paul realizes that his relationship with Jan is over, and he seems ready to move on.
Well, except that, of course, he can't until he gets rid of his centerfolds.
So that's not going to happen.
Oh, no. And he has already stated, you know, the fact about he and Kev is that, and Tommy, really, they'll always be at Knightsbridge. You know, it's not going to change. All the girls are sisters, so they're not going to change. And all the guys are still going to be there except Willie, who managed to get out.
Right.
Yeah, so...
And he gets one last scene with Marty, where Marty once again knows the exact perfect thing to say right off the top of her head.
Yeah. Well, which makes it...
Which reminds me of a, it reminded me of a piece of advice that one of my high school buddies gave to me while we were in high school. He said, I didn't really understand it until much later in life, but it was actually quite perceptive. He said, when a girl is really into cool music at a young age, she's trouble. And I extrapolated that. I extrapolated that to, when a girl, a 13-year-old girl, is that good at the witty repartee, stay away.
Yeah. That's interesting. Huh. That's funny. And thought provoking.
Yeah. He had some experiences. So they were, quite pleasant initially, but, ended up very poorly.
Mm. Ah. That's a double-edged sword of experiences.
Yeah.
You know, that whole regretting, only regretting things you haven't done. Yeah, that's easy to do when you haven't done all those things. What do you know about Ted Demme? Or is it Demme or Demi?
I thought it was Demi.
It could be Demi.
Did he direct Blow?
He did.
Yeah, so he died, right? He died pretty young.
Yeah, he died of a cocaine-induced heart attack at age 38.
And his brother has directed a pretty decent movie or two.
Yeah, Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
They were the Rafe and Joff Fiennes of directors. Or maybe not.
I equated them to the Scott brothers.
Probably. That's much more accurate. I just wanted to be able to say Joff Fiennes. Because if your name is Ralph and Joseph and one of you goes by Rafe, you got to be Joff. Yeah.
No, see, make sure he gets the memo.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See, sometimes these things don't work out as being funny, but still, what can you do? Yeah. Jonathan Demme, Silence of the Lambs, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Getting Married. Sounds like a bummer movie. The Manchurian Candidate remake.
Do you have it up? Who was in Rachel Getting Married?
That is,
Is that Anne Hathaway?
Yes. Yeah, she's.
That is a great movie.
Yeah, but it sounds like a downer.
Yes.
I mean, it's like 28 Days with Sandra Bullock. No real desire to see that movie.
Well, that's because that movie is terrible.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know because I'm not seeing it. He directed Philadelphia, Silence of the Lambs, Married to the Mob. Oh, he directed Swimming to Cambodia. Fantastic. Something Wild.
Rachel Getting Married has the most heart-wrenching dishwasher loading scene I've ever seen.
Yeah. No thanks. The Truth About Charlie. That's the remake of Charade with Walter Matthau and Audrey Hepburn, where Thandie with Newton.
Marky Mark and Thandie Newton.
Yeah. Yeah, and then coming up is Rocky Horror, Lost Boys, The Thing, and An American Werewolf in London, which have been a pleasure to edit as well as talk about originally. Because all those movies are great. I had forgotten how much I really liked The Lost Boys. You know, I don't think I had watched it. Well, I know I haven't watched it recently. But, you know, I thought it might be a nostalgia watch, and it was, but still, it's a solid movie.
It was, that movie inspired me to watch the latest season of 24 that's been hanging out on my DVR since early in the year.
And?
I'm a few episodes into it, and it's definitely a season of 24.
When I edited The Lost Boys, I realized that I didn't throw, I'm like, I'm going to put a lot more quotes from Beautiful Girls in than I did with Lost Boys. There are some things, but really it's, you know, so much of the movie is about atmosphere and tone and things. But the one thing I really appreciated is, how well Corey Haim did as the scared kid. All of the lines where he was actually supposed to be stressed or scared were really well done.
Yeah, he should have had a bright future.
Yeah, well. And I resisted any kind of urge I would have had to go back and watch any of the sequels to Lost Boys. That turns out both Frog Brothers are in both of the sequels.
Oh, well, at least it's nice to know that the other Frog Brother got some work.
Yeah, I think, seriously, that might be his only other work. But, you know, good for him. Did you, I think I talked to, you or Jason about, I must have been Jason about Dogma, about Drawing Flies, the movie Drawing Flies.
Must have been Jason.
Yeah, well, I wonder if I even...
Yeah, I mentioned during the podcast.
Yeah, well, next time I see you, I'll just give you a copy of Drawing Flies, the actual video, because it's really short, but it's, like I said, it's one of those ones where I watched the whole thing, and then immediately I watched it again with the director's commentary, or in this case, it was the entire cast commentary, except for one guy. And that was the funny thing, is to hear about how they talk about that one guy. Because they don't have anything bad to say about him, except that he had an unfortunate erection in one of the scenes. But they were like, what happened to that guy? Yeah, he works construction or something. I don't know, some craziness. When, they realized that, no, those people that do make 'em ups in the movies, they're the crazy ones. The construction guy is actually...
Doing construction like Anthony Gatto?
Well, maybe, yeah. Yeah, Yeah, because when you install microwave ovens and custom kitchens, you think that all these rock stars get their money for nothing and the chicks for free. The grass is always greener. That's what Mark Knopfler said. And then he used the F word quite a bit, so much so that you can't actually even hear that version of the song, I think, for the most part. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.